Start with thoughts of goodwill. Make something good out of your mind. We're here. You can think about anything you want to think about. But you ask yourself, what kind of thoughts would give long-term happiness and well-being? And one of them would be just that, thoughts of goodwill. Goodwill for yourself. Tell yourself, may I understand the causes for true happiness and be willing and able to act on them. And thoughts of goodwill for others. May they too understand the causes for true happiness and be willing and able to act on them. You want to extend those thoughts to anybody, everybody, without limit, without picking this person or that person. The image the Buddha gives is of a person playing a conch trumpet. The sound goes in all directions. The person playing the trumpet doesn't say the sound should go to this direction or not that one, or this person and not that person. It goes to everybody in all directions. That's making something good out of your mind. Now bring your attention to the breath and make something good out of the breath. It's already coming and going out. But how does it feel as it comes in? How does it feel as it goes out? What kind of breathing would be comfortable right now? Wherever the breath is most obvious, wherever there are sensations in the body that tell you now the breath is coming in, now the breath is going out. Focus there. Remembering that breath means not so much the air coming in and out through the nose, but the flow of energy throughout the body. So where does it feel good? Focus there. The question is, could it be better? You can experiment with breathing. Longer or shorter, faster, slower, heavier, lighter, deeper, more shallow. See what kind of breathing feels best for the body right now. You may not realize, but as you're doing this exercise, you're embodying a principle of the Buddha praise, which is called contentment. Contentment means being happy with what you've got. And there are two main misunderstandings about this. One is when the Buddha is talking about contentment, he's talking about material things. In terms of the monks, it means being content with whatever food you get, whatever clothing, shelter, medicine you get. If it's good enough to practice, it's good enough. For lay people, it means not wasting your money on unnecessary things. Because you're going to be able to use your money not only for your material well-being, but also for the well-being of your mind. In a case like that, if you can do it with fewer material possessions, you have more that you can give to others, more that you can stash away for the future. But this doesn't mean you're content with whatever comes up in the mind. This is the first misunderstanding. Some people think that you have to be content. The mind is full of hindrances. The mind is full of defilements. Well, you just accept that fact and live with it. That's not what contentment means. Contentment doesn't apply to the mind. The Buddha said you shouldn't tolerate anything unskillful coming up in the mind. If it's something you can get rid of quickly, you get rid of it quickly. If it's something that's going to take more time, if you have to watch it for a while to understand it, okay, watch it. But with that thought in mind, you're going to learn how to see where its weak points are. Because every unskillful thought that comes into the mind has its reasons, has its excuses. Why it's okay to think this thought now, or why you have to think this thought now. So look at it. Can you believe those excuses? Can you believe those reasons? So sometimes this will take time. If you just try to squash every thought that comes up without understanding it, it's going to come back. But remember what the Buddha said. the secret to his awakening was not only being discontent with unskillful qualities, it was even being discontent with skillful qualities, as long as his level of skill had reached the point of full awakening. He wasn't going to rest. This is in the attitude he teaches to his son. He says, if you see that you've done something well, take joy in that fact, but don't be satisfied. Continue training, try to get better. Of course, if there's something unskillful you've done, you're trying to figure out some way not to do it again. So that's the first point you have to understand. Contentment has to do with material things. And you learn how to practice discontent skillfully in your mind. If you're very discontent, unskillfully, you can make yourself miserable. So as I said, when you see that you've done something good, take joy in that fact. For example, if you have some unskillful thoughts coming to the mind at night, there's a temptation to break a precept, say, and you get past that without giving in. Okay. Remember that, how good you feel the next day. That'll be encouragement for you the next time around. One, you've learned that you can withstand it, and two, how happy you'll be. So you take joy in what you're able to do, but you keep reminding yourself there's more to be done. You learn how to take joy in that fact, that you're willing to do what's required, what you're willing to do more. You don't talk about how tired you are being on the path, how long the path is. You take joy in the fact that you have the opportunity to practice with more skill, more detail, with more precision. That makes this a joyous path. You're a conscious agent, and you want to be a good conscious agent, to act more skillfully in your ability to improve your powers of judgment. That's the first point to understand. The second point, even with material things, you learn how to make the most out of them. Take this method of breath meditation we're doing right now. You make the mind content to be with the breath, realizing that this is the path. But you don't just stop there. The Buddha says there are potentials in the breath. There are ways of breathing that can give rise to refreshment. There are ways of breathing that give rise to pleasure. Ways of breathing that gladden the mind, steady the mind. What are those ways? So you take the raw material you have and ask yourself, what's the most skillful way to develop it? Years back in the 1950s, there were social scientists who went to Thailand from America. They were concerned that Thailand might become communist. And they tried to understand how to prevent that. So they figured they have to study Buddhism, what the Buddha taught, to see what kind of attitudes people had. And one of the things they came across was this emphasis on contentment. And they thought, this is bad. This is not going to help the country develop. So they asked the monks to stop teaching contentment. Well, all the monks all laughed. It's just sitting there is not contentment. What it means is, if this is what you've got, you learn how to make the most of what you've got. You don't sit around dreaming about having more, aside from what you can make out of what you've got. Like with your breath here, you can do all these different things. Breathe down through the torso, breathe down through your legs, breathe down through your arms. Try to develop what you've got. You think of the case of a John Lee. He discovered this method when he was off in the forest. He'd walked 3 days into the jungle. He was going to spend the rains retreat in next to this little hill tribe's village. He got there, and a few days after he arrived, he had a heart attack. No medicine, no doctors. There were no roads. The only way he was going to get out was walking out. He certainly wasn't in any shape to do that. So what did he have? He had his breath. He said, well, let's see what we can do with the breath. And he worked with the breath energies in the body. Strengthened the breath energies and strengthened the heart. And at the end of the rains retreat, he was able to walk out. So he was content with what he had, but he didn't just sit with what he had. He learned how to develop what he had. So you look at what you've got and ask yourself, what's the best thing I can do with this? Sometimes you have things that you realize the best thing you can do with them would be to give them away. You develop the virtue of generosity. Other cases, you figure out how to fix them so that they actually are more useful or are useful in more situations. You use your ingenuity to make the most of what you got. That's an important element of contentment. People who are not content with what they've got but want more, they just sit around dreaming. Or sometimes they go stealing or they go borrowing things. As the Buddha said, you borrow things, you get yourself in debt, you place yourself under a huge burden. What you do is you look at what you've got. This applies to your talents, this applies to your material possessions. Ask yourself, what is the best thing that can be done with this? And use your ingenuity as much as you can. You're not being accused of being discontent. You're learning how to use what you've got wisely. We'll take the example of Ajahn Mun. He lived in the forest. And living in the forest can be a pretty unpleasant place to be. But what he would do is he'd take the area where he's staying and he'd make it really clean. Arranged to have the brush cut away, sweep every day. So the forest became a very civilized place to be. Again, through his efforts, through his ingenuity, that his small resources became livable. So look at what you've got. Make the most of what you've got. When you do that, then you really understand the Buddha's teachings on contentment. You don't just sit there. You develop your resources so that when the time does come to sit with your eyes closed, you can sit down with a sense of ease and well-being and work on what needs to be really fixed, which of course is the state of your mind. There's this habit we have of learning to make the most of what we got. We bring that inside. You ask yourself, when the Buddha gained awakening, what did he have? He had his body and had his mind. You have a body, you have a mind. What's the difference? Well, he made the most of his breath, and he made the most of his mind. You can make the most of yours.